Coming up in this podcast, we discuss two prominent private WA companies, Harvest Road Group and Burncut, the outlook for oil and gas projects in the Perth Basin, as well as the global outlook for LNG, female directors, Chinese telco Huawei, and the special report on construction companies and projects in WA.
Welcome to Mark My Words, the weekly podcast from Business News, with Mark Pownall and Mark Beyer discussing the important business news and data stories from Western Australia.
Hi, I'm Mark Beyer. Welcome. And I'm joined this week by Matt McKenzie, who's standing in for Mark Pownall, who's still enjoying a holiday. Matt, welcome.
Excited to be here, Mark. Just to kick things off, you had some very interesting data on two of WA's big private companies.
That's right. Look, it's always interesting to see the annual reports get lodged with ASIC for unlisted companies, and some very substantial companies they are. So one of them was Harvest Road Group. Now, this is the agricultural investment company owned by Andrew and Nicola Forrest, best known, of course, for Fortescue Metals Group. And then they've got their Mindaroo Group, which is sort of their private family office. And then sitting under that is a series of other businesses. So they've got a very large, diversified operation. Harvest Road on its own, I mean, the most prominent brand in there, if you like, is the Harvey Beef business. That's Western Australia's largest beef abattoir down near the town of Harvey. But they've also combined with that all their pastoral stations up in the Gascoyne and Pilbara regions. It's a very substantial business. Revenue last financial year, $303 million. Net profit, just under $7 million. So Andrew Forrest is not alone in this area. Gina Reinhart, Kerry Stokes, a lot of other people with deep pockets have invested a lot in the pastoral industry. And it's seen as an area with some good growth opportunities. And in fact, Harvest Road is at the forefront of that. They're developing a facility near Mora, basically for a year-round assured supply of beef cattle. And they're seeing this as an alternative to the live exports of cattle. So that's an exciting opportunity. Another company that's not as well known in the public mind, but very substantial, is Burncut. Now, they're the largest underground mining contractor in Australia. Privately owned group, founded in Kalgoorlie many years ago. Now, their latest annual accounts just show the scale of their business. Annual revenue for 2018, just under $1 billion, $991 million, up about 30%. And a tidy profit for them as well. So, really interesting to get these insights into companies like this. Part of that growth, Burncut picked up some big contracts with Saracen Mineral Holdings to develop their Carasu Dam project. So, good news stories there, two growing businesses, and, nice to get that insight into what's going on.
And listeners can also check out more data on private companies like that through the BNIQ search engine, Mark.
Absolutely. Now, Matt, I'll throw to you. The Perth Basin, a couple of hours north of Perth, a lot of oil and gas there. Been a bit quiet for a while, but I think there's signs there might be a pickup in activity.
Yeah, I've been following a lot of the businesses in that area for a while, a lot of the hopefuls there, and there's often some rumblings about potential. It looks like after a couple of years where almost nothing has happened, finally there's going to be a bit of activity. So one example is Warrego Energy and Strike Energy. They've got a project West Erregulla that they're going to be drilling in the next couple of months. They're getting a big rig over from the East Coast owned by a company called Eastern Well. That's one hole drilled, which I think would be almost as much as what was drilled in the entirety of last year in the Perth Basin. I understand there are other companies that may also be looking to work with Eastern Well to use that rig while it's here. So names that come to my mind would include Mineral Resources. Mineral Resources acquired Empire Oil and Gas after that company went bust, listeners may recall, in the latter half of last year. So Mineral Resources is working on the Lockyer Deep prospect in Perth Basin. Warrego and Strike are working on West Erregulla. There's another company called Norwest Energy, which is leading the work on the Xanadu prospect, which is just slightly offshore. They're doing some 3D seismic work. Beach Energy, which is listeners will be familiar with as being well related to Kerry Stokes, is working on doing some seismic surveying, I think, at a field called Trieste. Then there's Mitsui. This is the most interesting one. They bought AWE, as listeners may recall, and have been working on this Waitsia project, stage two, about $100 million investment, for some considerable time. As I recall, it was almost 18 months ago they went into, the owners at the time, AWE, went into a front-end engineering and design competition. It still doesn't, it's not clear who the winner is. The company says they're continuing to progress it. I'm not 100% sure what exactly they're doing because they've been taking quite a while, Mark. Overall, though, listeners will know that over the past few years there have been some times where the oil price has been very poor, very low. I think now that things are looking a bit rosier, there's a lot of encouragement there for people to get the equipment moving.
Okay. And for industry at large, I guess the good news from this is that it means as these projects develop, there'd be an assured supply of gas, primarily gas, for the domestic market.
That's right.
So that's a good thing for WA generally.
One of these, I think, has a resources of, I think it's about 1 trillion cubic feet. And someone suggested to me, oh, well, potentially that could be piped up to be exported out of the Northwest Shelf. And I thought to myself, well, I think all the gas goes in the other direction. But that gives you an idea of how big it would be if it was developed.
Yeah, okay. And then the pickup in oil and gas prices, that's also, I think, helping to stimulate activity globally in the LNG space. In fact, there was a report out, I believe, looking at a very large pickup in global investment in that space.
So consultants, Wood Mackenzie, put something out yesterday saying they reckon there'll be $200 billion of capital spending in LNG in about the next 6 years. Final investment decisions totaling that amount. So that would be almost 90 million tonnes, basically, of capacity, per annum capacity coming onto the market. One of the interesting things they said, the industry is notorious for cost overruns and project delays. Just 10% of all projects have been constructed under budget, and 60% have experienced delays. And they've said, well, a lot of stuff's going to be happening. It may well be in the next 3 years alone, there'll be 70 million tonnes of capacity sanctioned, which would be in construction, would be stretched beyond the height of the 2010 to 2014 boom. But they did say, not all of this investment is going to be in the same place. It's going to be spread around the world, so that's going to mean much less inflation pressure. Obviously, if you're having three plants built on Gladstone Island or a number built in WA, that centralises the costs into one jurisdiction and means it's very expensive. In terms of WA, though, there is some activity happening. Listeners will be familiar with Browse and Pluto, the Pluto/Scarborough development. We're expecting a final investment decision, for example, on the Pluto-Scarborough development next year. That'd be worth about $15 billion. We've already had the likes of McDermott, Wood and Intexi named as contractors. That would be 9 million tonnes per annum. It'd mean one of the most remote fields in WA would be tapped, the gas piped back onshore to the existing Pluto facility where there's going to be a second train built. And then in the Browse Basin, the famous Browse project, this would be a $21 billion development with a 900-kilometre pipeline taking all of that gas down to the existing Northwest Shelf plants as backfill. It would be 10 million tonnes per annum. For example, KBR has been appointed a contractor on that. So the wheels are continuing to turn in terms of WA LNG, and those two investments alone, if they happen, will be a big boost for our economy. Woodside also has, as the proponent of those two things, of those two projects, also has an interest in Canada, where jointly with Chevron is developing a project, Kitimat. Now, Chevron's making an acquisition of another US business called Anadarko, and that's led some people to speculate that perhaps Kitimat won't be happening. But Woodside came out this week and they said, no, things are looking good. We're going to go for three trains, not two, which was the original suggestion. And in order to make sure we've got some supply in there, we might even buy third-party gas from the Canadian grid just to get us started. That will be at least a decade away, though, Mark. That's on a much longer-term horizon.
And some latest updates on that, I read just before we came in here that there's a competing bid for Andarco.
There you go.
So Chevron might not get their hands on that one after all. And look, I was just having a look. It's quite extraordinary the number of places around the globe where people are looking to develop LNG projects. So in the US, in Canada, you've mentioned, in Mozambique, in PNG, there's plans for a second LNG project. And of course, Qatar, which traditionally has been the world's largest exporter of LNG, they've got some big new projects planned as well, amongst other places. And just for context as well, I think you said the Wood Mackenzie is tipping another, 90 million tonnes of capacity mm-hmm. to come onto the market. Now, roughly, I'd say that's about the total amount that Australia exports per year.
Yeah, that'd be about right.
So a very substantial boost. You'd have to think, though, that given Woodside's established reputation and expertise and the amount of work they've already done, you'd still think that amidst all that competition, Scarborough and Browse are pretty well placed to get up. I'm sure there are many others that will not get up, but you'd certainly have to put those two high on your list of likely projects.
I will say, word on the street talking to contractors is that no one's quite as effective or efficient at getting these things done as Woodside is. On a different note, Mark, at female directorships, we had some interesting news out this week.
That's right. So look, the Australian Institute of Company Directors has been pushing for several years for larger listed companies, the ASX 200, to have at least 30% of their directors being women. Now, we've had about 4 years of progress on this front, but the latest data shows that we've actually gone backwards in a small way. That was very disappointing for the AICD. They thought we were about to hit their 30% target at the start of this year. And in fact, it's gone backwards. So the current figure is about 29.5%. And perhaps more significantly, last year, amongst all the ASX 200 companies, of all of their board appointments, 45% were women. Start of this year, that's dropped down to 23%. They've also pointed to the fact that a lot of companies have just one woman on their board. In fact, we've seen that over the last couple of years. There's been this sort of rush by listed companies just to find, very talented women, but companies were very keen to have at least one woman on their board. And having done that, I think a lot of companies sort of stepping back and saying, okay, we've done that. But the AICD is saying, well, look, you know, maybe you need to look a bit further than that. So they were continuing to campaign to get more women on boards. Certainly amongst the, you know, if you look at the top 50 companies, they're well above that 30% target. And in fact, Perth own Fortescue Metals Group is one of the leaders in this space. They've got 5 female directors out of, I think, 9 directors on their board. So it certainly shows that you can do it. And so there's a challenge for directors of listed companies as to the involvement of women on their boards. Now, Matt, we're mixing up the topics this week. You had a visit to China last week as a guest of the big telco Huawei. Mm. They've been in the news, lots of controversy around them. Must have been an interesting experience for you. Can you tell us a bit about that?
I made it out safely, Mark, which is the most important thing. It was fascinating. We went to Shenzhen. Looked at the company's headquarters, 20,000 people working there in a massive campus, and also the company's annual analyst summit, lots of media and lots of investors there. There was a few journalists from Australia that went. Huawei has been a company which has had a lot of controversy around it, a lot of mystery, mostly in Australia because it was banned from building the 5G telecommunications network here. Previously, it was banned from building the NBN. To give listeners a bit of an idea, much of the 4G network currently in operation, which is thinking of Optus or Vodafone, for example, 60% of one of the major carriers' networks in this state is actually Huawei equipment. And people might say, why ban from 5G but let someone build for the 4G? And I read something actually interesting just overnight. Malcolm Turnbull spoke on this topic in America at an event, read the speech. It turns out that with 5G, because there's such low latency, because everything happens in the cloud, all of the software is ran rather remotely, whereas in previous iterations of mobile technology, a lot of the software that does the payment processing and sort of things like that would happen in a sort of centralized location. So whereas previously you might have Huawei build the edge of the network, and then you might have the core stuff done by providers from Western countries, perhaps, as an example. With this, because all of these different applications are run on the edge of the network, there was a lot more concern about having Huawei have access to it. So to give listeners a bit of an idea, it's a private company owned by the employees, which is a rare thing in China. But there is a lot of concern from intelligence agencies around the world that perhaps either the Chinese government might order the company to do things that are not necessarily in the best interest of consumers, or that it might be infiltrated from people within, say the Chinese Communist Party or something like that.
And safe to say that governance in China is at best opaque.
Well, that's very true.
In terms of, who pulls the strings and who controls things.
That's exactly right. So two interesting notes on this, for example. The founder has said, well, if ever I'm asked to do anything bad for my customers, I'll wind up the company, which is a great thing to say. As to whether or not, if the Chinese government actually wants something to happen, I would suspect he wouldn't have very much choice as to what the outcome is, to be honest with you. So it's great that he's very noble, that he thinks that way, but that doesn't mean that he'd be able to deliver on it. And particularly in 20-odd, this is a network for the long term. This is going to be used for remote surgeries, for your autonomous cars. All of your data will be in the cloud. It won't be on your phone. It's going to be much more impactful than the NBN was. It's going to mean the Internet of Things. It's going to underpin the Internet of Things. So this will be a network that lasts potentially for decades. So if he dies or leaves as founder, or the Chinese government decides to take a different approach to how the company is owned or whatever, his ability to step in if the Chinese government asks him to do something bad, well, he may not be able to do it. So, as I said, a noble commitment, but not necessarily one that can be delivered on. On the flip side, to give you an example, there's another company from the United States, and the name escapes, and I think it's called Super Micro Computer Systems or something kind of silly like that. But they had a manufacturing base in China, and it turned out no one realized this, but the Chinese company that was doing the manufacturing for them was slipping in these little chips, and they were selling this equipment to the US Defense Department, allegedly, to the likes of Amazon, allegedly. And this is all revealed by Bloomberg last year. So it goes to show, when it comes to telecommunications supply chains, things can happen in there that you're not necessarily aware of. And that's what's made the governments very concerned about it. The US, Japan, other companies that are also running these bans on Huawei. Now, to give listeners a bit of an idea, Huawei said, well, firstly...
I guess for context, Matt... Mm. From what you were telling me earlier, this was an analyst and media briefing mm-hmm. that you attended, and there were some pretty robust, open discussions there. So it's an interesting the way in which a big Chinese organisation is tackling the challenges that they're facing.
Yeah. So they've said, we feel like we've been decided to be judged guilty when there's not really any proof. And as you say, Mark, they have been, to be fair to them, they've gone out of their way to be transparent. They have had... lots of journalists have flown in from around the world to check them out in detail. One thing that they do that a lot of other companies don't do, they have testing centers where people can go over their code. I'll get to that in a moment. But they've said, well, our competitors don't do that. One of their other defenses is they've said, well, if you're concerned about things being manufactured in China, our main competitors in terms of rolling out this 5G technology, Nokia and Ericsson, they also manufacture in China, and in those cases, in joint ventures with Chinese government-controlled entities, which is a very fair point that Huawei is making. So they've got some fair things to say. Having said that, with the testing centres in the United Kingdom, for example, the oversight board of Huawei there said, well, we found some issues with the code. We're not even sure if this is actually the code you guys are using on the network. So we've got some suspicions. And Huawei said, oh, it's just old code. We'll spend a lot of money. We'll fix it up. Don't worry about it. So as you say, there were some robust discussions between journalists and the company about what all of this meant. My suspicion or my thinking on this is And readers can make up their own minds, read the article, it's on our website, it'll be in the next edition of our paper. My thinking on this is, although there's a lot to say that perhaps Huawei is very well advanced in this, that the technology is very good, that it'll be great for civilization, there's a lot to suggest that restricting them will mean we get a lower quality outcome. And there's a lot to suggest, to be fair, that many of the people there are good intentioned and they're doing the right thing, including the founder, likely doing the right thing, wants to make a difference in the world. But Mark, this technology is just so significant. You won't ever find a more eager, passionate supporter of foreign investment than I am. But even I would be concerned about having potentially a company where there could be this risk in future build the network.
Okay, thanks, Matt. And look, this is an issue that, well, we're already grappling with it. I mean, China is Western Australia's largest export market. Our economic future is tied up inextricably with China. So there's going to be a lot more of these sorts of discussions as our relationship becomes evolves, gets more intertwined and more complex. So appreciate the update. And there's a very detailed report up on our website already.
And Mark, to finish us off, construction, there's plenty happening out there.
Look, Dan Wilkie, our property writer, has put together the special report that'll be out next week. So he's had a look at all the big construction companies in WA. We've updated our BNIQ listing of all the construction companies. Number one, again, is Multiplex. They're the big guys in town. They've got several very large projects on at the moment, including the expansion of the Caronup Shopping Centre and the new WA Museum in town. So Dan spoke to Chris Palandry at Multiplex. Someone else he spoke to was Sam Domenico at ProBuild. They're doing the Ritz-Carlton and the Towers. They're just about finished down at Elizabeth Quay. Also building the King's Square development in Fremantle, the Envy Apartments on Murray Street. Several very large projects for ProBuild and other names, you know, Doric, Lendlease, BGC, Pindan. These are some of the big companies that we've spoken to or looked at the projects that they're working on. Look, overall, you've got to say it's a fairly soft market at the moment, particularly with the small number of cranes on the city skyline. Certainly nothing much happening in terms of big office developments. The one that's sort of in the offing is the new Chevron headquarters down at Elizabeth Quay. And Multiplex, again, is lined up for that project. I think for some context around this, it's notable to look at several projects that are not happening. So the most recent example, Three Oceans, the Chinese group that was planning the big apartment towers at Scarborough, they've put that project on ice, well, cancelled the project. The Galleria Shopping Centre out at Morley, there were plans for a very large expansion. And we reported exclusively last year that one had been deferred. The Western Hotel down at the eastern end of the city, great hotel, but right next door to it is the site for where they were planning to build an office tower. You know, no sign of that one happening. Down near the causeway, Lendlease has the Waterbank site. They've been working for several years on that one and trying to get it off the ground, but no construction activity happening there yet. So, there are opportunities. Aged care, that's a bit of a growth area. Education, both the universities and schools, there's a fair bit happening in that space. And there are still several very large retail developments underway. So, look, a good overall survey there from Dan on what's happening in the sector. And the other theme that he looks at, or the issue, is around security of payments. You know, been a long-running debate about how to look after subbies and make sure they get money for when businesses or lead contractors get into financial strife. So a good analysis of that issue from Dan Wilkie. And that'll be up on our website next week and in our next edition of Business News. So something to look forward to. And on a final note, our Rising Stars Awards are coming up shortly. This is an annual awards program we've been running for about a decade. It's about featuring fast growth organisations. So whether you're a startup or a family business or a large business or anything in between, and if you've got a good growth story to tell, we'd love to feature you as one of our rising stars. You can get all the details on our website, or you can call Rosemary here at the office, 9288 2100, and you can get all those details or go to the website rising-stars.com.au. So thanks for listening, and have a good week.
Thanks for listening to Mark My Words with Mark Pownall and Mark Beyer from Business News. For more information, please go to businessnews.com.au/podcasts. And to receive these regularly, search for Business News WA in iTunes or SoundCloud.